Hi, my name is Christina Phillips. I'm one of the producers for The Exchange, and when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, one thing I noticed right away when I was screening calls is that as people became more isolated, a lot of people were reaching out because they were desperate for resources. For example, during one of our early shows on unemployment, a woman called me and said, "I don't want to be on the air right now. I just don't know how to reach the Employment Security Office. Could you please give me their phone number? I don't have internet, and I heard your phone number on the radio, so I called you." And what is great is that in that moment, as the call screener, I was able to give her that information in real time, and I get the chance to talk to all kinds of listeners and take what I hear from them and bring that back to our team. So when we're planning shows, we can use that information to know what kind of coverage is best for you. We know it's a difficult time financially for so many people, but if you can, consider becoming a sustaining member or making a one-time gift to NHPR to help support The Exchange and this work that we're doing. You can donate by going to nhpr.org, and there you'll find all of our coronavirus coverage in one place. Again, that's nhpr.org, and thanks.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Many Granite State kids look forward to summer camp all year long. And for Granite State parents, these programs are a lifeline, a chance to focus on work and offering peace of mind that children are outside and active. However, this year, camp directors face incredibly tough choices about whether to open camps or go virtual or remain closed altogether, especially after the first child in New Hampshire was diagnosed last week with a rare severe inflammatory condition caused by COVID-19. Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. Tell us how a closed or virtual summer camp might affect your family. And if you work in this field, how are you rethinking this? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And we're going to begin our conversation today with day camp programs, but later in the hour, we'll talk about overnight camps. So joining us right now are Chris Emond, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Central New Hampshire, Megan Hamblett, Executive Director of the YMCA Alliances of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, and Sherry Nichols, Executive Director of Teaching and Learning at the Manchester School District. Welcome to all of you. And Chris, I'll start with you. The Boys and Girls Club runs tons of after-school programs, summer day camps. Who do you typically serve, Chris, in a typical summer?
Children of all ages, actually. Recently, we just merged with another organization, so it's infants all the way up through mid-teens.
Wow, infants even. That's a heavy lift. What are your plans right now, Chris? Yeah, what are you thinking about?
Well, right now we are gearing up for summer, and it is going to look different. We're going to run it very much like we're running our emergency child care programs now, which are going to be groups of no more than 10 people in a room.
So what's that going to be like? Just describe how a typical day might run.
You know, it's going to be completely different. Our day camp is more of like a trip camp. So they would basically congregate at a school and then go off and do something. We're pretty much sure we're not going to be able to do that this summer. If we do, it's going to be very short trips by nature. So we are looking to the school systems and working with them to get access to the schools along with some of our main buildings. And we are going to be separating them out in groups of nine. So there'll be a 9-to-1 ratio with staff. And, you know, our staff are going to be they'll have to be very creative this summer to make sure that there's enough for them to do during the day.
Yeah, right. And you're operating largely in Concord, Chris, is that right?
We have sites actually in Allenstown, Concord, and Laconia.
Okay, because I know in some towns, the pools may not open, and I know that's a big activity for kids at day camp for sure. Sherry, how about you? What kind of summer programming does the Manchester School District usually offer?
We offer summer school. We call it Summer Learning Academy for kindergarten all the way through eighth grade. And we offer credit recovery for the high school. We have encompassed with that some 21C, so they get extended learning opportunities. And our EL summer program works in the SLA program for EL services throughout the summer. And we do have ESY services for special ed students.
So EL is English learners, Sherry?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and what were some of the other programs that you mentioned? A couple other acronyms there, just want to clarify.
We also work with the special education services. We continue with those small group services throughout the summer. And 21C is an after-school program that runs for like photography and things of that nature to do extended learning opportunities. And they do it in a high-needs area that has a high poverty threshold.
Wow. So sort of summer learning, but it sounds like some summer camp type stuff there too, Sherry. Is that your opinion?
Yeah. So what we've done in the past is we've always had a fun theme encompassed in with our summer learning program. We're shifting gears and we're kind of flying the plane and building it at the same time. We're still waiting for guidance from the Department of Education about if we can have it blended so we can have some face-to-face contact with students. That has yet to be given to us. But we're thinking about having it as the great outdoors as a theme. We're going to have choice boards that can be sent out. So some students, we usually service about 600 students through our programming just with us at the school site. So we're hoping that we'll reach out more. We just found out that Fun in the Sun in Manchester is closed, and they approximately had about 400-plus students in that program. So we're hoping that we can service those students as well in a blended model. The Great Outdoors theme, we're going to start off with a virtual campfire where students can plug in. We're going to do some sing-song and have some, you know, movement breaks in that aspect. We're going to break it down so then students can get individualized instruction with teachers for reading and math. We're going to do project-based learning activities where if we cannot get them face-to-face, we're going to send out kits to the household with our drop-offs that we're doing with our meals.
Wow, that's really interesting. So sort of a blended type program and hoping to maybe help out some of those families who, as you said, just learned recently that Manchester's sort of typical Parks and Rec summer camp program will not be happening. What are the biggest changes you're going to have to make, Sherry, this summer? It sounds like you've described some of them already. You know, virtual, obviously, that was probably not what you did last year. What else, Sherry?
Some of the other pieces that if we do have the face-to-face aspect, we have to have small numbers and they have to have PPE equipment. So that's that personal care equipment. So they have to have masks and things. Even when they're talking about having students come in and eat, they don't want students to go into the cafeteria. They want them to be maintained into the classroom setting. So that's a huge shift for us. We were extending our program where it would only be around noontime before. We're going to extend that throughout the day. This year where we're going to have send out some things where we can do some snacks, like make s'mores together and things of that nature with their kits that they would pick up. But we're also going to have some night pieces where we're going to have, like, ghost stories and things that will be done virtually. Usually the camp would end around 1 p.m., but we're really going to have activities and read-alouds and things that go throughout the day.
Wow. You're going to be busy, Sherry. It sounds like you might be one of those few people who's actually hiring this summer. That's a big extension of what you normally do.
Yes. We usually hire for each of the individual buildings, but we're going to require more teachers to make sure that we can pull this all off without a hitch. But we have we sent out a survey to families, and we noticed that there were some hour blocks in the later afternoon, which we didn't operate before, that they needed support. So we're using that data that we've collected to make sure that we're personalizing it as best that we can to meet the needs of our families.
Wow. Well, and I appreciate the analogy about flying the plane while you're still building it. I think a lot of people feel that way these days. Megan, I want to turn to you. And again, we'll talk later in the hour with two directors of sleepaway camps, including one YMCA camp. But how are you thinking about day camps right now, Megan?
Right. So in New Hampshire, our nine YMCAs collectively are the largest provider of childcare and summer camp in the Granite State. And we typically serve more than 15,000 kids and more than 1,000 young children in our early childhood education programs. Since the beginning of COVID-19, most of our childcare centers have been operating for essential childcare programming. But due to the anticipated safety protocols regarding group size and cleaning for running childcare and camp programs this summer, our Ys are projecting they'll be able to serve approximately 6,000 children, which represents 40% of our usual capacity.
Wow. So a lot fewer kids coming to the YMCA day camps because you can only take smaller numbers and have to keep people in smaller groups.
Megan, or is it because some parents just don't want to send their kids, they're afraid?
Mostly because of the smaller group size and what our capacity is. So we're having to sort of reinvent our camps, no different than the Boys and Girls Club and what the Manchester schools are talking about. And, you know, that's YMCAs who don't have separate day camp facilities that actually operate out of their YMCA facilities are really trying to look at what they can do to get outdoors. So before they might be using, you know, rooms within their facilities for camp and then going out on field trips and excursions. Now they're looking at either building structures outside their buildings for shelter or working with the National Guard on getting tents secured, different things that they've never really had to look into before.
Wow. Yeah. And I appreciate the difficulty of getting kids out. A lot of cities haven't made decisions about their pools. But as I said, Manchester has closed pools, playgrounds, basketball courts. That's going to be tough, Megan, if you're operating in Manchester to keep kids active. I wonder what you think.
Absolutely. So everything from when you think about your typical day camp and transportation, getting the kids there, how that's going to look. Not only some parents don't always just drop kids off. We actually pick children up from Portsmouth. So we run camps anywhere from Portsmouth the whole way up to Keene. So, you know, how do you safely transport kids with social distancing? You can't fit as many kids on buses, right? And then once they get to camp, what does drop off look like? Instead of parents getting out of their cars and bringing kids in and dropping off, that's all going to look very, very different. How kids congregate together in groups, much smaller, obviously. When you think about arts and crafts and, you know, sharing markers and crayons and all the different scissors and the things, all of those sorts of pieces of supplies and equipment need to be multiplied because everyone will need their own. So if from the very smallest to even how many kids be in a canoe or a kayak or a sailboat or on the ropes course. So yeah, it's really shifting our typical day camp, reducing the amount of children, but being able to give the quality experience that families come to know and deserve.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about the canoes, but certainly younger children might want to be in a canoe with an older child who knows how to run the thing. So all these details. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Once again, exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're talking about Summer Camp 2020 and all that has changed. Right now, we're focusing on day camps that a lot of kids go to. Later on, we'll talk about overnight sleepaway camps and how they're viewing this year. Many of those have already closed. But as we're hearing, a lot of the summer programs are trying to do what they do, but just do it differently this year. Again, the number for you to join us with your comments and questions about how this has affected your life is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Olivia, I want to invite another voice into our conversation. Jim Steiner of the Boy Scouts of New Hampshire is with us. Jim, welcome. Good to have you on the air with us this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Well, and Jim, from what I understand, the Boy Scouts has canceled its overnight camps for the summer. What about day camps, Jim?
So we have canceled the day camps as well, but what we have done is already we are running virtual and active campouts for scouts and families, backyard campouts. So we just completed one over Memorial Day that featured some 250 scouts and families, and it actually reached beyond New Hampshire to 6 to 8 states as far west as Alaska.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing we're looking to pivot to, since pivot has become a popular phrase for describing this. So in terms of day camp, we are going to be looking to structure activities that come over line that bring the scouts into the backyard to actually do things, to include, as we did this past weekend, like I said, the overnight event with, I heard mentioned s'mores, tenting out with the family, campfires, yoga with the parents, that kind of thing.
You know, I'm sure you're aware, a lot of kids in New Hampshire don't have backyards. Kids who live in Nashua or Manchester, some parts of Concord. I wonder what's there for them, Jim?
Well, one of the things we're looking at doing is we have three large summer camps here in New Hampshire, Camp Carpenters in Manchester, and then we have the Griswold Scout Reservation in Gilmington Iron Works that hosts Hidden Valley Scout Camp and the Camp Bell. These are all tent camping facilities, and we house thousands of scouts over the course of the summer normally. So we are going to open them up for family camping. So in answer to your question, somebody doesn't have a yard, as long as the family will come, because we need to keep that family together.
Sure.
For adult supervision and so forth, they'll be able to come in and use our facilities. And where a tent site normally houses 30 or so scouts in tents, it can safely house probably 4 to 5 families being spread out. And the families will be able to not make use of such things as the canoes and rowboats for the same reasons that one of your other individuals summarized, because of the concerns we have for safety there. They will be able to come up and use the camp facilities in terms of, we'll have the restrooms open and clean. They can have the enjoyment of being in the outdoors, and they can participate in what we are going to be calling our Scout in a Box program. And that will be the way that we are trying to keep them all involved and give them an opportunity to be someplace. They can also come up just for the day as well.
Okay, interesting. So people who don't have big backyards or backyards at all can, if they're scouts, go to Camp Carpenter and the other camp you mentioned with their families to use the outdoors there. That's really interesting.
Yeah,
and making use of the resource that you have. Yeah, go ahead.
It's very, very true, but we'll also open this to non-scout families that would, you know, perhaps be interested in considering the scout program. And people, all they have to do is Google Daniel Webster Council, and they would be introduced to what's going on. We just made the decision over Memorial Day weekend to cancel our residential camp. So our scout families are just getting the word now that here are the alternatives that we are looking at. And in doing so, we also want to reach out, because we recognize there are a lot of non-scout families out there. As you've just described, they live in apartments in Nashua or somewhere, and they're trying to figure out, what are we going to do? What's available to us? So if they go to the Daniel Webster Council website, very shortly, they'll be able to see, here are the alternatives, and here are the locations. And as long as you're bringing your own tent gear, you're all set. Restroom facilities will be available, and water will be available, and there will be other folks there who would be able to be supportive. We have faculty in place at these camps 12 months
all
a
right.
year or so.
Well, Jim, I'm sorry that you had to make this decision, but everybody understands you're doing the best you can with what you have, and I really appreciate you being with us today. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, absolutely. And I may come back when I hear some of the discussion about the residential camps, because that certainly is what impacts us the greatest.
The sleepaway camps, right.
To hear what Chris and some of the others have to say as well.
Sure. Well, we appreciate you being with us for now. That's Jim Steiner of the Boy Scouts of New Hampshire. And again, our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. All of you, Chris, you first. These decisions that you guys are making are, of course, very hard. And I wonder where you're getting the information, Chris, that's helping you make the decisions that you're making.
Well, it just so happens that I'm on the governor's task force to reopen the state. So my role was childcare. So I was kind of had a front row seat on some of the guidelines that have been published for childcare, and the ones that are still in draft form to be approved for day camps and overnight camps. So that was incredibly helpful. But, you know, the CDC guidelines, and I know there are CDC guidelines kind of that have been published for summer camps as well. That's the best source of information for now, as far as trying to keep kids as safe as possible and understanding what the group sizes should be in this phase.
Well, if we could clarify, Chris, so because we did get an email about the governor's task force, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Representative William Marsh wrote in, He says there is guidance for day and overnight camps that was approved by the task force last Tuesday. And I definitely looked at that before the show today, for sure, as you mentioned, Chris. Representative Marsh says currently these documents have gone to public health and then to the governor's office. He says it is true that the governor has not announced any guidance. So, Chris, can you just walk us through this? Because a bunch of the camps that I looked at getting ready for the show did say we're still waiting to hear from the governor. So can you just clarify how that's supposed to work, Chris?
To be honest with you, basically what you just said, yeah, it goes from the, we had a work group with Y camps and recreation departments and privately owned camps, overnight camps I'm talking about specifically, to get their input on the guidelines to make sure that they were constructed in a manner that would be safe, but also feasible for the camps to deploy. And then it has to go through public health, which is very reassuring, quite honestly, as a member of the task force, we're not the final say. Public health really has to put some input to make sure that it's safe. And I think parents should be reassured by hearing that. But then ultimately it is up to the governor and what his decision is based on what public health is telling him.
So is that to say, Chris, that you and Sherry and Megan, based on what public health says and then what Governor Sununu says, may have to change everything you just told me about?
Well, I suppose that's possible with summer day camps, but I'm not sure how Sherry's running things right now, just to be safe for us at the Boys and Girls Club. We are running summer day camp as if it was childcare. So we're following the guidelines that were already published. Day camps, as far as we're concerned and the way we run them, are still kind of, at least this summer, going to be building centric. But quite honestly, it's going to be very similar.
Okay, so the guidelines for daycare programs have been established and signed off on. And so you're saying, Chris, that your program is going to kind of run along those guidelines. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry if there was a misunderstanding. The day camp guidelines have not been published yet. We are running ours as if it was childcare.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, daycare. Yeah. Okay.
Correct. Yes, correct. Yes.
Sherry,
now, if it changes, then we'll certainly take a look at that.
Sherry, how about you? What are you waiting for? What more information would you like to have?
We've been hearing from the Department of Education that we're going to get guidelines. They've been out in draft form for certain aspects of the, for like special education services, but for general services, they have not given us the clearance yet. So that's why we have three different plans going. We have if we can do face-to-face, what that looks like. We have the plan of doing that blended learning that I was talking about and the virtual nature. We kind of have three plans planning at the same time.
Wow. That's flexible and creative of you, Sherry. So you're waiting to hear from the Department of Education, and once you hear from them on what you can do, you're going to go with A, B, or C. Is that where you're at, Sherry?
Yes, ma'am. And what we hear, we should have word by the end of this week.
Yeah. Megan, how about you? Where are you at in terms of information gathering and being able to, you know, sign on the dotted line, so to speak?
Well, as Chris mentioned, the YMCA did participate in the task force that Chris was on. But in addition to that, our national YMCA organization, Y of the USA, has worked with the CDC, National CDC, and the ACA, American Camping Association, to put together guidelines as well. So right now, until the governor's guidelines come out finalized, we are making all of our plans based on what the guidelines are from the CDC and the ACA.
Again, that's the American Camp Association.
Correct.
Megan, is that right? Yeah. Well, we got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I have a lot more questions about how you're making the choices that you make, what your hopes are to try and make this a fun summer for the campers that you're still planning to serve. And we'll keep taking your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477 is our phone number. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook or Twitter, and we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, summer camp, how day camps and overnight camps are viewing this year given the ongoing threat of coronavirus. Now, many overnights are already closed, but some day programs are trying to adapt, as we've been hearing from our guests, Chris Emond, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Central New Hampshire, Megan Hamlet, Executive Director of the YMCA Alliances of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, and Sherry Nichols, Executive Director of Teaching and Learning at the Manchester School District. You can join us to tell us how your summer camp plans have changed, how that might be affecting your family. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477, and our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Sherry, to you first, what are you hearing from your families that you serve in Manchester? What are their concerns for this year? What are they hoping for?
Well, a lot of the families, as I mentioned, we do send out surveys, and our communication director sends out communication from us pretty regularly on a nightly basis of updates and things that are going on. So we try to make sure that our communication with the families is daily in this remote learning experience. So what we're hearing from families is that they really are looking, some families want little short periods of time if they can have students go in. And like I said, we're hoping maybe we could do some of that blended learning aspect for that, where we have some other families that would really, they would like to continue the remote learning right now for the safety of their children due to some of those medical issues that we've seen pop up throughout the news. And we're really trying to take in account that certain parts of their day, I know families have said that they are looking for more support at certain hours of the day, and we're really going to try to make that sure that happens, whether blended or virtual, to help support and give them ideas and things of that nature to do STEM projects. We've even thought about, we sent out lists of things that they could collect so then students could be making things at home with recyclables as well, and then we could send home the markers and other things if they don't have those. But they could build a shelter and things of that nature because great outdoors is our major theme. And we've even found we're going to do a backpacking piece where we could do it virtually, and there's a virtual backpacking tour that you can do of the national parks, and we're going to do some learning experiences around that. But again, the day is going to be staggered, and there's going to be breaks and stops. I know that some parents have also shared that they get nervous about the screen time, and we're very cognizant about that as well, and we're going to make sure that they have some activities and some scavenger hunts and things that they can do around the city.
Wow, you are going to be busy this summer for sure, Sherry. And it sounds like some parents then don't want their kids to physically come into your program yet. Do I have that right?
It does seem that some parents are not ready yet, and that's okay. But there are some parents that are. So we're going to try to see if we can meet the needs of everybody with those choice boards and see what we can do to help support.
Well, and toward that end, Chris, as I'm sure you know, late last week, the state announced the first known case in New Hampshire of a rare but severe impact of the virus on children called multisystem inflammatory syndrome. And the state's top public health doctor said, unfortunately, it's not surprising that we've now seen this in New Hampshire, given that it's been reported elsewhere. How did this news, Chris, affect your thinking and your planning, given this, you know, rare but pretty scary impact on children?
That's a good question. When I started reading about that, and I think it was New York City was the first place that we had heard about it. I think your reaction is certainly being nervous, because now it's like, okay, up until now, children by and large at least weren't showing signs. You know, you can only do what you can do, which basically we've got to be open. I think people do need the service. We too put out a survey to parents. This was early on, right after the schools had shut down, just to gauge if parents were even going to send their kids to summer. And even then, we had an overwhelming response where parents are like, look, I am hoping you're going to be there. I am assuming I'm going to have to go back to work. And, you know, and again, that was 7 weeks ago when this was still kind of fresh in people's minds. Our biggest thing here is making sure that, you know, the cleaning procedures and that people are following the procedures, and that the groups, as counterintuitive as it is for a Boys and Girls Club or probably a Y and anybody else, they don't see each other all day, which is tough. And you get back to the creativity of the staff when you're working with the same 9 students, and the staff doesn't change either for obvious reasons. You got to keep those cohorts intact. You got to have some really good staff. And luckily, you know, a lot of our organizations that are being represented here have great staff that are dedicated to pulling this through.
Wow. So you're creating like little families almost, Chris. You know, one staff person, 8 or 9 kids, and that's the group to try to contain the spread.
Yeah, 1 or 2 staff. And quite honestly, if there's a family with siblings and they're fairly close in age, they're all in the same room. And we explained this to the parents. You know, everyone gets it. They immediately got it. And they said, yeah, you know, it'd be nice if they could meet other kids, but we get it. That's one household. So now you're down to maybe 7 other individuals coming from different places. And, you know, anything we can do to lower the risk.
Sure. Even though some siblings are probably getting pretty sick of each other right now, we're just going to have to put
well,
up with it.
You know, we knock on wood. I'm here at the club right now, and you know they're hanging in there. They're doing
okay.
Well. I think they're happy to kind of be out and doing something a little different.
Well, sure. And Megan, what are you hearing from families about their concerns, whether they're going to send their kids or whether they just absolutely cannot wait to send their kids?
We've had an overwhelming response to the latter, that parents cannot wait to send their kids. They're looking for some sense of normalcy in their lives, not just because oftentimes day camp is essential childcare. It is childcare when school isn't in session. So number one, it provides that resource, but also they're looking for that sense of normalcy for their children to get them back out, even if the social groups are smaller. But getting outdoors away from the screen time, as that's what schools have gone to finish up this school year, and really giving them something they can look forward to.
Yeah. Any concerns, Megan? Like, I'm not so sure these protocols are good enough, or what do I do if somebody at my kid's day camp does come down with coronavirus?
Absolutely. And WHY is no different than the other organizations that are here today with us, are looking at the same precautions, and doing everything that we can to offer these programs. I know as the overnight camps are going to be coming on in a bit, you know, they're very challenged. So unlike our day camps, our overnight camps have chosen not to run this summer because they don't feel that they could do that in a safe manner that doesn't compromise what they offer for a camp experience.
You know, and I asked Chris this question, I'll ask you too, Megan, your reaction to the announcement that there is now a child who has had this severe multisystem inflammatory syndrome, again, related to COVID-19. How did that affect your thinking as someone who is, you know, again, helping YMCA organizations continue with their day camps?
Right. It's all about the safety for us and how can we do it in a safe manner. And we've really been going by the principle of, first of all, are we allowed to run? And if we are allowed to run, should we run? And if we deem that necessary, how are we going to do it safely? So all of our camps that are running have reopening phases for, you know, what that looks like. Everything, again, from transportation to drop-off to dining to each and every activity a child participates in at camp, how we staff, how we clean, each and every part of it.
I'd like to ask all of you about staff. That's a really important part of overnight camp and day camp. And boy, when kids bond with their counselors, it's a great thing. Sherry, what about your staffing? Who typically works for you in the summer? And what are you telling them at this point about what their jobs will be like, whether they'll have jobs, whether you've got more jobs than ever this year with all the extra protocols? Go ahead, Sherry.
So that's a great question. We've surveyed the staff as well to see who would be interested. We've put all 3 scenarios out, and we've had a lot of response from teachers that said that they're ready to sign up, and we've had volunteers even from the Department of Education to do some of those read-alouds that we're going to have in the later part of the day. So we've had some great outreach from the staff. As far as operations, we have a very flexible and dedicated Manchester staff, and they're ready to go whichever way direction that we would like.
Yeah, and as you said, you've got 3 different scenarios, and you're waiting to just press go on any one of them. So usually you're staffed, Sherry, because you're more of a summer learning program. You're staffed with teachers, is that right?
Yes, we do have teachers and paraeducators. We do have some nurses, because if they're on site, we need to make sure that their medical care is taken care of.
Right.
So usually our buildings have those as well. And we do contract with other entities if they come in, like Four Winds or VINS. They'll come in and do like a presentation with like birds of prey or things of that nature at times. So,
will you be able to have those outside presenters come in? I'm glad you raised that, because some of the camps that I've been looking at have said they're not going to do outside visits this year.
So we're trying to set those up virtually. I've been in contact with the same people that we've worked with. Another one that we've had great success with is the Cliff Children Literacy Foundation, in which we usually do the Summer Readers Program at each one of our site locations. And we've been in contact with them about some virtual pieces. And we are going to do a lot of authentic text as grab and go, so then students can build their own libraries at home as well for books.
Megan, how about your staff? What are you telling them and what are you hearing from them? I know, so, you're not running a particular camp, but yeah, you're in touch with all the YMCA camps.
Absolutely, yes. So I work with all of the CEOs and the camp directors in the state of New Hampshire. So first of all, I think through YMCA camping, many of our leaders are developed from the camping programs. They're CITs, then they come into the leadership program and they become leaders as counselors. And so what we're hearing is that many of them are coming back. Those that aren't coming back are generally the ones that are in college. They're coming from out of state. So they're deciding that they're going to stay within their own state this summer, because we have a reduced number of campers that are actually going to physically be able to be at camp. We're not finding staffing a difficulty at this point in time.
How about you, Chris? I have to ask you about that as well. Who your staff is and how they're feeling about coming back to work, and whether you maybe need more staff given that you're working in very small groups. Yeah, go ahead.
We are looking for more staff. So anyone that is interested, we're certainly taking applications now. Most of our staff are our after-school program staff. We have 23 sites in New Hampshire, along with the ones I had mentioned earlier in the program. Most of those are embedded in schools. So when the schools closed, we were able to kind of fill them in and utilize them in some of the service sites. They also then become our summer camp staff. And much like the Y, we get kids that kind of come back from school and whatnot over the years. And that's what we're certainly reaching out to see who is coming back and who isn't. A little late in the process for us to do that, but of course there were so many question marks. But I know our site directors are busy making their contacts.
Well, it does feel late in the process for sure, but I understand. I mean, everything's evolving and changing. You know, yesterday's advice doesn't seem useful today sometimes. So I appreciate that. And speaking of trying to find advice and guidance, Katie wrote an email. She says, where will parents be able to find the camp guideline protocols? In the meantime, where can parents find guidelines for childcare? Katie says there is a lot about childcare on the nh.gov COVID-19 websites, but so far, Katie says, I haven't found anything that details what protocols will be followed: masks, gloves, cleaning, testing for workers, etc. So, Chris, can you respond to that? It sounds like Katie has gone on nh.gov, but hasn't found enough information yet about camps. So go ahead, Chris, please.
Yeah, they can go to a website called Child Care Aware or New Hampshire Early Learning, and they have the guidelines posted there. I was just looking at them again.
Okay, yeah, and things do seem to be shifting all the time. So I appreciate you trying to find the latest guidelines, Katie, and we will also have links on our website, Katie, as well. It's nhpr.org/exchange. Last question for all of you. What's your message for families this year who are pretty stressed out about all this, wondering what will be open, what it will be like, what might be available, whether it will be safe, whether they should send their kids, whether it's worth going online? Sherry, to you first, lots of questions from families. What's your message to them?
I would say we are going to provide the best services that we can in this very uncertain time, and we're going to hold the safety of our students and our families and the community as our utmost priority. And we will work with them and make it as flexible and personalized for their needs.
Well, Sherry, good luck, and it's good to talk to you today.
Thank you.
That's Sherry Nichols, Executive Director of Teaching and Learning at the Manchester School District. Megan, how about you? Your message for families that are, you know, just waiting for somebody to decide something.
Yeah, I would say reach out to the camp directors, the camps that your children have attended in past years. Of, you know, at this point, parents generally already have their summer camp plans already done. So reach out to those directors. They are there. They are working. They are transitioning to reopening plans, and those plans are changing as we get new information. But I think they are your best source of information.
Yeah, and again, given your position, Megan, Executive Director of the YMCA Alliances, do you think that most YMCA day camps now we're talking about, we're going to talk about overnight camps in a minute, but day camps will be open this summer?
Yes. So we have taken a poll. So again, because I'm the Executive Director of the Alliances of three different states, our day camps are all running at this point in time that I am aware of. So please just reach out and contact those YMCAs that the day camps are run through.
All right. Well, Megan, good to talk to you too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Megan Hamblett, Executive Director of the YMCA Alliances of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Lastly, Chris Eamon, to you too. What's your message to families listening today?
Well, I think my colleagues hit it right on the head there, but ask questions. Absolutely. As Megan said, many of them do know our site directors as well. They're the ones that they are comfortable with. And go through those guidelines that we're being asked. If you're new to a camp, I would go through those guidelines that we just referenced and ask questions of the site director to get a sense whether or not the program is following them, so you can feel comfortable that those standards are being followed. I will say, to reassure parents, that been in the childcare world for a while, childcare people by nature tend to be rule followers. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of gray when it comes to licensing. We're all licensed, we're all regulated, probably a bit more than what people may realize. And you know, if you're looking for a safe environment, you know, the camps, whether it's us, the Y, or 21st century programs in the school, you've got some professionals who've been at this for a while.
And Chris, I have to ask you, since you are on the governor's task force around this issue, when might we get some real clarity? Again, the task force issued its recommendations, but we're still waiting for public health and we're still waiting for the governor himself.
Well, I was just staring at my magic eight ball here to ask for an answer to that question, but I don't know. Hopefully soon, because certainly for overnight camps, they're in a spot where I'm sure they need to know.
Okay. Well, it's really good to talk to you, Chris, and good luck to you too this summer.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's Chris Eamon, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Central New Hampshire. So coming up, we turn from summer day camps to overnight camps. We'll talk with two directors describing what they're going through and their hopes moving forward. That's all coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
News about the coronavirus changes daily, and every day NHPR brings you reliable reporting about what's happening in your community and across the state. Access to this essential coverage is thanks to the ongoing support of our sustaining members. Join them today by setting up a monthly contribution of just $8 or $13 a month. Support NHPR for yourself and for the benefit of the thousands of listeners who rely on this vital community resource at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. This year, summer camp directors face an incredibly tough choice. After more than 2 months of staying at home, kids and parents are desperate for summer camp to open. But with coronavirus still circulating, is it safe to do so? We talked earlier this hour about day camps. With us now are the directors of two overnight camps, John Tilley, director of YMCA Camp Coniston, an overnight camp for boys and girls in Grantham, and Eric Carlson, executive director of Camp Quinnebarge, an overnight camp for girls and boys in Moultonboro. And in full disclosure, both our sons have gone to Camp Coniston for many years. So I just want to put that out there. Welcome to both of you. And Eric, I want to start with you. What factors are you looking at right now as you look at summer 2020?
So, you know, we start, as your other guests have said, you know, kids, we know they need camp, or at a minimum, they need the social interaction. They need the play, the fun, the friendships. And we know how difficult this has been on them. So beginning in March, we started working with about 100 other New Hampshire camp directors on strategies to open, along with healthcare officials. We have the CDC guidelines, the American Camp Association guidelines, and the draft, at least, of the New Hampshire guidelines. And so we've taken all of that into account, and we're coming up with our protocols based on those and going above and beyond to make sure that we can provide a great program, but also a safe program for our campers and our staff.
And you are still opening, Eric. And as we heard from the day camp providers, some of them said they are opening, but going to not be able to serve as many kids as before because of the need to keep kids in smaller groups. Is that something you're looking at Quinnebarge, Eric?
Yeah, we're looking at all the options available to us. I will say that our primary objective is to get the kids to camp and staff to camp safely. And that means temperature checks for 2 weeks of the entire household before they arrive at camp. It means mandatory testing. And then once they're at camp, it means creating a bit of what we're calling a drawbridge, where very few people will leave camp and very few people will come onto camp. And with that, we will have that will maximize our safety, but give us more flexibility in how these groupings are able to work. But with regard to the actual sizes, again, we're still waiting on the state on that, but we're preparing for smaller activity groups and meal groups and, you know, situations like that.
Wow. So 2 weeks, if one of my sons were going to go to your camp this summer, 2 weeks of temperature checks every day before he would arrive, and a coronavirus test before he would arrive?
Yes. And not just the camper, everybody in the household.
Wow.
We really feel that the key to this is, you know, just as though we all are interacting within our own household now. Our objective is to create a very large household, and that means getting everybody to camp safely. And if that's what it takes, then that's what we're going to do.
And John, you've already made the unbelievably tough decision to close down for the year, and I know that was heartbreaking for you. What were you looking at to help guide you?
We were looking at very much the same things that our friends at every other camp are looking at. And every camp program has a different design. Our kids come in for 2 weeks primarily at a time at Camp Coniston. It's a fairly large, it is a very large camp, actually. We have almost 400 campers a session in camp and over 170 staff. So the idea of bringing in over 500 people from all across the world, really, every 2 weeks just seemed daunting, to say the least. We just didn't know how we could do that with our design. And, you know, as you sit here and listen to the two camps, I'm certain you can pick up that there are just sort of different design elements to the programs that make different things possible.
What was the conversation, John, like for you and your staff, you know, kind of around that table, deciding what to do? I'm sure that was, you know, incredibly difficult. It's an understatement to say it was difficult.
It's hard to even think back on all the incarnations of plans that we put forth. You know, 40% of our kids come from New Hampshire. So, of course, we talked about just running camp for kids from New Hampshire. We talked about just running kids camp for children from the Upper Valley. We talked about all sorts of different things. How would we get our staff here? How would we get our CITs here? In the earlier segment of your show, they were talking about how a lot of camps grow their own leadership, and I'm sure Quinnebarge does as well, but Coniston is no exception to this, that our kids come through the camp and then join our staff. It's part of a sort of a rite of passage that they seek. And our staff, as a result, look like our campers. So yeah, 40% are from New Hampshire, but 60% are from all over the country. And once we started looking at getting people here from all of those different places, it didn't seem as likely.
What are you hearing, Eric, from your camper families and your staff about what they want and if they have any concerns about coming back?
Yeah, it's definitely faced, everybody has reacted a bit different, and it is all over the place. There's certainly a fair amount of anxiety about running this summer, both from staff and from our campers and parents. There's also a lot of excitement, you know, so we absolutely have had families who have canceled and said it's just not for them, or maybe they have somebody in their family who is, you know, has a condition or something like that. But we've also heard from a lot of parents who are just like, my child needs this. My child needs this. Can, you know, what do we need to do to make this work? So we're fielding a lot of questions, and you know what, we're going through the same thing. You know, I'm a parent to a CIT and a staff member. My wife and I are there all summer long. So we're sort of the resident old people at the at Quinnebarge. So we've been going through the range of emotions too.
Yeah. So some people have canceled, saying, look, we have someone in our household with a compromised immune system. We can't afford for a camper to come back with some kind of iteration of the virus and hurting that person in the household. It sounds like, Eric, things are still kind of up in the air for you. You have my sympathies. It's hard to make plans.
It is hard to make plans. You know, again, we're waiting on the governor's task force to make the final decision. We are going forward as though we are opening. We have a small team at camp right now getting the place ready, setting up the activities, putting on a fresh coat of paint where we can. We are redesigning our program for this summer to include a lot more hand washing, hand sanitizing, smaller groups, you know, things like that, all campfire that most camps do throughout the summer. That won't happen the same way. There'll be a group of smaller campfires. But, you know, the songs and the traditions and the activities, those will be the same. We're just going to have to slot them in different ways.
Yeah. Well, a couple last questions for both of you. And again, I appreciate you being with me. It's not an easy topic to talk about. John, what's the fiscal impact of closing for summer 2020?
Well, as a nonprofit that brings in practically all of their revenue in summer camping, we're projecting as much as a $1.3 million loss. And so that's absolutely devastating. That's because most camps spend about 30 or 40% of their revenue before the summer ever starts.
Right, getting ready.
Yeah, getting ready takes a lot of money, sending people to trainings, fixing up your buildings, hiring your staff, doing all of the police screenings, et cetera. There's just a lot of things that go in behind that. People have been very generous in supporting us. So we are slowly knocking that $1.3 million loss down, but it's going to take some time and a lot of care from our community for certain.
So some people donating their camp fees to help the camp survive, others putting it, saying don't refund it, just bump it into next year, John. Is that one of the strategies
exactly.
that you're using? Yeah,
absolutely. Those are the things that we're doing.
Well, both of you, I know that some camps offer different types of programs in the fall and even in the winter. Your facilities, I'm sure, are beautiful in all seasons of the year. Eric, to you first, how much do you do that in general? Open up your facility off season to other programs? And what about this year? What's your thinking there?
So we do run a few programs, a few rentals, I will say, weddings, reunions, family reunions, things like that in the fall. We don't do it in the spring because we're getting ready for the summer camp. We are most likely not going to do those this year. I think it's going to take every ounce of our energy to work our way through the summer, and with all the changes that I think come August 22nd, we're going to need a we're going to need about a month of sleep to recover.
So that may be a fiscal hit for you, Eric, not doing those fall programs that you typically do.
Not so much. We really don't do that many. Our facility is shut down by the end of September. All of our water is above ground and pipes that go around. So we really have to shut down before. We're not a year-round facility.
Okay. Well, both of you and John, to you first. I know, again, this has been very hard for you. How are you staying hopeful, John, these days? Where are you finding that?
So I'm looking at different ways to open the facility, perhaps, if the governor as the governor releases and relaxes social distancing policies and we move into a different phase, we would be looking at the possibility of allowing local community members to come out and use our facility since there aren't kids here this summer, and perhaps take hikes, walk around, have family picnics. Of course, we'll limit the number of people doing that, and there's a lot to figure out. We certainly have not finalized those plans, nor has the governor even said that that would be okay for us to do yet. But assuming that we can get to that stage at some point in the summer, I'm hopeful that we'll actually just be able to connect with our local community by doing that sort of work.
Yeah, we heard from the Boy Scouts of America, Daniel Webster Council here in New Hampshire, that they're also planning to open up their camping facilities for families to camp. How about you, Eric? This must be an anxious time for you. How are you staying sane?
You know, we have number one, it's difficult, but we have a wonderful camp community that has been with us from the beginning. We have a wonderful staff, many of whom return year after year. So we have a lot of people who are working with us and helping us sort of think through these issues. And we're being transparent with them, and they're being kind and compassionate back to us.
All right. Well, good luck to both of you. Tough summer, and I wish you all the best. Eric, thank you very much. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you, Laura.
Eric Carlson, Executive Director of Camp Quinnebarge in Moultonboro, and John Tilley, good to talk to you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's John Tilley, Director of YMCA Camp Coniston, an overnight camp in Grantham. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.